Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest, it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world in developing and adopting new solutions to industry problems. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. My goal of the podcast is to outline a problem in the produce industry and then discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed today. Stout Industrial Technology collaborates with customers to build and launch industrial technology solutions that are designed to last. The Smart Cultivator combines a proprietary, agriculturally proven mechanical platform with Stout True Vision technology to eliminate weeds and cultivate ground in a single pass. Visit stoutagtech.com. That's stoutagtech.com to learn more. If you are anywhere in the food supply chain, from producer to retailer food service, you're going to love this episode. Also, if you are a tech provider or investor in the food supply chain, you should listen up. I talk with Shauna Day and Britta Rosenheim of Cultura Capital about their landscape of the supply chain and the trends that they're seeing. Most of the investments to date have been focused at either end of the supply chain, either in ag tech or food tech. This landscape focuses on everything it takes to get food from post-harvest to retail. Get ready to take notes. They talk about the four pillars of the supply chain and the seven innovation drivers. We also discuss why this is the time for investment in the supply chain and the difference technology can make. Let's jump into the conversation. Britta and Shauna, it's so great to have you on the podcast. As you know, I'm such a big fan of your work. You recently published your Supply Chain Tech Landscape 2021, which is a masterpiece view of the industry. You've also laid out trends and the importance of investing in the supply chain now. For those of you listening who are near a computer or your phone, you can Google Cultura Capital and open up the landscape. We'll talk about it later. But before we get to that, let's get to some background. So tell me about who you are and a little bit about how you got there and your focus on the supply chain.
Thanks very much, Bonnie. It's great to be with you. I'm Shauna Day, and I'll give Britta Rosenheim a chance to introduce herself in just a second, but I'll jump in first and just give you a little bit of background about the journey and how we kind of got here. So I've historically covered ag tech, and some of your audience members might have seen the farm tech and ag tech landscapes we've published for the last 5 or 6 years. And we really look at that through the lens of IT for food and ag. So we're looking at software, hardware applications. And I think I cover at this stage about 1,600 companies. That's probably growing on a global basis. And so this was really a fun opportunity for Britta and I to do some collaboration as we look into the messy middle of food and ag. But just kind of by way of background, I sit in the Central Valley in California. So I'm based in Turlock. And you know, this was kind of a natural extension for me to look into the supply chain, given that kind of ag background and the ag roots. And not only that, I mean, in California, it's a $200 billion food processing industry. And a lot of that takes place in the Central Valley as well. So this has kind of been a passion of mine since I moved back to my hometown about 7 years ago, and really spent more and more time thinking about not only, you know, what's happening in the farm, on the in the field, but also the value add, the food processing, manufacturing, and a lot of the logistics. So I'll kick it over to Britta to give a little bit of her background.
Thanks, Shauna. Yep, this is Britta Rosenheim. For me, it was also a national extension going upwards. You know, historically, over the last decade, I've focused on technologies that are supporting the retail, CPG, and restaurant sectors. So obviously, they're very tied to the supply chain. And, you know, over the many years, I've spent time looking at pockets of supply chain, but you know, I think COVID really unearthed an opportunity for us to roll up our sleeves, connect our worlds, and you know, really understand the different technologies associated with the different value chains across the food supply chain. So really great timing.
Great, thanks. So please define for us what supply chain means to you. And remember that many of my listeners are in the produce industry. So how do you define supply chain?
Yeah, I mean, I think we spent a lot of time actually thinking about how we position it, how we define it as we were creating the landscape itself. So we'll unpack a little bit of that later on in the conversation, but kind of fundamentally, we see the supply chain in four kind of pillars, if you will. First mile, so that's basically what's happening from the farm gate to the first packer shipper, processor, primary processor, the first kind of handoff. The second pillar is really around production and food manufacturing value add. The third, in our view, would be around distribution logistics. And then the fourth would be kind of demand. So really what's happening closest to the retailer, the food service provider, really that kind of loading dock. And then, you know, Brita's kind of world picks up within the walls of the retailer food service and looking at food tech. But that's really how we've kind of approached the supply chain, as it were. And then as we thought about, you know, what are some of the innovation drivers within that supply chain, we really got pretty deep over the course of 2020, looking at sort of seven different distinct innovation value drivers, strategy and analytics. So really thinking about how to improve responses to changing dynamics and kind of internal shocks, as we saw in 2020, but just internal considerations, you know, whether it's weather, trade, labor disputes, you know, what's happening on the ground. We looked at planning and execution. So how do we create an environment of more responsive operations, better forecasting, better planning? We looked at asset utilization. I think this is a particularly interesting one as we start to think about load planning and transportation and logistics and co-packers. You know, how do people use their assets and how can technology improve the use of those assets in a more productive and profitable way? Of course, labor is something that's you know, near and dear to, I'm sure, most of your audience's ears and hearts in this topic. You know, as an innovation driver, we really believe that labor is going to be a key influencer in terms of adoption of automation and technology. But not only that, just worker safety as well. So what kinds of tools and technologies can be applied to improving worker safety? Of course, quality and food safety is another key innovation driver that we looked at in the supply chain. And that's really thinking about how you decrease FSQ food safety and quality costs, you know, costs to comply and report, to monitor. How do you mitigate those risks, food safety risks in particular? And our produce listeners would probably really identify with kind of more real-time technologies and more real-time tools to help mitigate food safety risks. And then, of course, extending shelf life. And we've seen some really interesting innovative technologies there. The sixth pillar is really thinking about vendor and order management, and in our case, grower management. So, you know, how do you kind of digitize some of those back office processes and improve ability to collaborate among supply chain partners? And then finally, as a key innovation driver, the physical flow of goods, right? How do you increase visibility into the cold chain? How do you reduce transportation costs? How do you reduce penalties and rejections from the retailers? With sort of track and trace technology and reporting technologies. So that's a long-winded way of saying how we think about the supply chain, but that's how we've defined it in the landscape and then thought about investment opportunities and innovation opportunities across the supply chain.
Wow, there's a lot in that. That could be a whole other conversation.
We'll come back someday and talk about that.
Yeah. No, those are, I mean, that can only be spoken by someone who has really dissected this and looked at it very closely. So we'll dig deeper into some of that. So value creation to date has been consolidated at the endpoints of food and ag, as you were talking about. So growing and harvesting at one end where there's been a lot of technologies developed and a lot of money invested in ag tech on that side. And then, which is, Shauna, what you've worked on a lot, and then retail and food service kind of at the other side, there's been a lot of investment and technology development, which Britta, you've worked on a lot. So why do you think this is the time for investment in the supply chain, and how has COVID accelerated this need?
Sure, I'll take that one. You know, I think, you know, in doing this work, you know, even ahead of COVID, we are reaching a unique inflection point in the evolution of the food supply chain. We do think that there's growing, you know, agreement and understanding by food supply chain stakeholders that they can no longer put off investment into technology. So we're seeing, you know, increasing digital readiness, obviously spurred by, you know, COVID supply chain dislocations. But we're also seeing new innovation in terms on, from the tech companies themselves, new tech breakthroughs that are focused on, you know, the focused on the unique nuances of today's food industry. You know, some of that, again, pre-COVID existed, post-COVID exacerbated, you know, these shifting consumer preferences, the, you know, tremendous increase in omnichannel, you know, that's putting greater pressure on suppliers to adopt to the dynamic demands of the buyers. Of course, we're seeing, you know, as Shauna referenced, you know, acute labor shortages, that's driving the need for automation. You know, and taking a step back, we're looking at market and investor demands for increased traceability and sustainability. You know, so I think, you know, those are some of the key drivers for, you know, that were percolating ahead of COVID, but I think we've really sharpened the focus of the different participants across the supply chain and recognize that there is urgency that technology can address.
Yeah, and I think with COVID, you know, before COVID, most Americans didn't even consider the food supply chain. They, you know, had never even thought of it because food always showed up. And so I think that certainly has put some consumer focus on it as well.
Yep.
So what part does digitalization play? And can you give some examples of that?
Certainly. Yeah. So just building on that, you know, I think we're seeing this increased recognition that accumulated technical debt is unsustainable in the supply chain. You know, right now, the supply chain tech category is highly fragmented. We're seeing a lot of legacy or very specialized or highly customized, you know, horizontal enterprise tech solutions. And so that's what we're dealing with. Digitalization exists, right? But we're looking, how do we take it to the next level and create interoperability across those solutions? You know, so we're seeing, you know, kind of clear venture opportunities to develop, we think, vertical plays in strategy and analytics, robotics, automation, you know, specialized distribution and logistics players. All of those rely on, you know, kind of unsiloed data, you know, connecting systems across the supply chain. We're also seeing artificial intelligence, machine learning, IoT, and other advancements that they're driving tech into more complex physical spaces. And so that's, you know, factories, roads, warehouses, farms, where historically we didn't have a lot of technology. And so, you know, that's paving the way for, you know, a broader digitalized platform foundation. Well, you know, we're looking, for example, you know, just the function of vendor and order management, right? We know Excel and email, they're the king of supply chain applications still to date. You know, but there's increasing adoption for business automation, process automation software. It helps operators in the first mile and in retail, you know, digitize those back office functions like document processing, payments, and those, that, you know, RPA, robotic process automation. There are a number of different technologies that are helping to create an underlying digital foundation to the supply chain. Ultimately, that supports increased collaboration, internal and external, you know, better data quality, better insights, you know, ultimately optimize procurement processes for the retailers because they have better insights, better predictive processes. And, you know, we think it has the potential to reduce overall time to market. And that's particularly important, obviously, in the fresh and perishable space.
You'd mentioned interoperability, which is an issue across the whole supply chain, on farm all the way through to retailer. And so how do you think about that? And how do you think that's going to play out? Because right now it seems like there's so many different systems and they don't speak to each other.
When we started this project, this Odyssey last year, you know, I really started to fixate on this idea of, so what? So if you have more data, how would that have changed some of the, you know, massive dislocations that we saw in the food supply chain? And a few that come to my mind, just based on where I sit, you know, we saw dairy processors kind of shut down overnight because they may have been servicing the food service industry. And all of a sudden, you know, they didn't need 20-pound totes of mozzarella anymore. And then you'd see milk, you know, dairy producers then having to dump milk in their fields. And that kind of dislocation, I think, really hit people hard. But getting back to that question of, you know, I asked myself, so what if we would have had more data, how would that have changed that outcome? And that's kind of got us to sort of pull on this sweater thread of data interoperability and how data flows through the supply chain to kind of start, you know, the more we pulled on it, the more things kind of unraveled as we were trying to get to some of these answers. But I think, you know, like you kind of have to unpack what the data is. Is it specs? You know, is it traceability data? Is it food safety data? You know, what is the data that needs to get passed from one hand to the next? You know, we kind of think about it in two ways, right? You've got what exists within the four walls, and a lot of that's going to be your production data, your manufacturing execution systems, or your sort of things that you need to operate the business within the four walls. But then you've got to share some of that selected data with your supply chain partners as well. And as we've sort of started to map out those data flows, which we did sort of an agonizing level of detail to get to some of those answers, those so what answers, then we kind of sort of backed ourselves out of it and said, okay, so what are some of those adoption headwinds in terms of getting people to share data or adopt digital technologies to kind of aid in the sharing of data? And Britta mentioned one, which I think is a real sort of struggle and pain point. And it's that Excel and email, you know, sort of remain the de facto technology standards in many industries. It's not unique to food and ag, but we certainly see that in food and ag. You know, we struggle with data quality, right? There's a lot of sort of manual entry. You write something down in the field or out on the loading dock, and you've got to give a piece of paper to somebody in the office who transcribes it. Functional silos, you know, that's another. We understand the pain of functional silos and decision making well now. I think if you're talking to an FSQ manager, procurement manager, a transportation manager, they might have different pain points, and the same solution's not going to necessarily solve their individual pain points. I think probably one of the biggest that either you and your audience may identify with is really change management or sort of incremental improvement or process improvement, however you want to call it. Getting people to change the way that they've always done things is really, really difficult. And it takes leadership and capacity building. And the technology has to be easy to use, and there has to be a short learning curve. You know, these are all, I think, learnings that the technology companies and the business leaders are probably struggling with. But hopefully, we sort of get over that inflection point, and we start to see more of that commitment to digitalizing, you know, businesses and you know, not sort of trying to do everything all at once, but really having a sort of long-term strategy for implementing technologies, and also recognizing that the ROI of tech starts to come when you can combine some of these systems and data sets. So having kind of reasonable expectations for ROI in one system versus a kind of systems of systems where you really start to hum in terms of the decision support, but it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, I was listening to this South by Southwest virtual conference presentation a couple of weeks ago, and it was a guy talking about how now every company is a software company. And it was very compelling in them talking about, you know, if you're all the tools that you need to be using just to do business right now, you know, you better have people oriented around how do things connect. How does data get passed through? So I think that's going to be a big change in our industry, along with every industry.
So yeah. I'd say building on that one particular point is I think that's where we're seeing the opportunity, especially at the venture side. You know, as I mentioned, you have a lot of legacy systems, but we're seeing kind of an increase of software SaaS. Early stage companies that are using AI and machine learning to, you know, better harmonize data from legacy systems. So they're even straddling the existing systems. You don't have to rip and replace, but they are, you know, they're integrating them to better optimize for real-time planning visibility by pulling from multiple systems. So you're getting modern lens, and this is also another driver. One other driver I'd say is consumerization of enterprise tech. Right, you're getting those modern user experiences and pulling this data from lots of legacy systems in order to make better decisions. And so, in the strategy analysis piece, that's where we think there's a lot of opportunity for earlier stage teams to help move the needle there.
Yeah, they were also talking about just making the decision of do you build or buy, what systems right. are out there, yep. like AWS, that you can, you don't have to build everything yourself, but what can you kind of plug everything into? And so that's for a company that doesn't normally use those systems, just the integration of everything is going to be a challenge as well.
Certainly. Yep.
Yeah. So, Shauna, you and I have had this conversation a little bit before about the first mile, but let's kind of open it up again to talk about what happens at first mile and what happens there right after harvesting has one of the biggest effects on produce quality and shelf life. So what do you see as the important technologies and innovations that are coming there and are needed there in the first mile?
Yeah, I mean, Britt is sitting in New York right now, and I'm in California, and I can probably hear her eyes rolling back in her head because I talk about first mile so much. I'm obsessed with it. Every time I get on the phone with somebody and I have a chance to talk about first mile or ask questions, I do. So I'd love to answer this question. Okay, so when we started unpacking this, I did a lot of work just to kind of understand what actually happens in the first mile, what data is collected from harvest and sort of labor planning, harvest equipment planning, actually harvesting its, the harvest activities themselves, to then kind of load scheduling, load logistics. Once it sort of leaves the field, then looking at receiving, grading, QA, QC, how are the commodities stored? And then, how are they marketed? How are they sold? And the shipping logistics from that point. And then also within that first mile umbrella, and you'll see this on the landscape, is really that grower contract management, grower management. So that's where the payments, the certifications are really, the sort of tools and technologies to keep records there. So that's a lot. Those are a lot of kind of discrete moving pieces that obviously have a lot of dependencies on one another as well. And, there's a whole bunch of different data sets that go along with those different activities. And by data sets, they don't necessarily go into a computer. They are on a notebook somewhere, or they sit in a dispatcher's head who's worked, on sort of load planning and transportation logistics for 20 years. So, that's the area of the first mile that I'm really excited about, but really, I think we have a long way to go in terms of digitalization. This is probably the least digitized part of our sort of supply chain as we've defined it. That I think a lot of the activity that at least I've seen as we've done a lot of the company research is really in that producer, producer management, grower contracts. There are sort of workflows and task management activities there that plug into food safety and quality, and they plug into some of the other traceability applications that we're increasingly seeing more and more demand for. And then, of course, you have monitoring also. And as you mentioned, and we've talked about, what happens in that first mile is so important from a quality and shelf life standpoint. You might think that the cut to cool time is 3 hours or 5 hours, and it might be taking 9 hours once you kind of look at the monitoring technologies. So I think those are just some of the areas that appears to be a lot of opportunity for technology intervention and sort of better monitoring, reporting, and management of relationships and contracts.
So let's switch to the landscape that you've done. And so this is such an amazing piece of work. And so those of you that can open this, it's at Cultera Capital, and you can open and look in the landscape. I realize that probably some people listening to this are either driving or folding laundry, so you might want to open it up later and look at it. But can you, at a high level, then walk us through kind of the backbone of the landscape? One of the things I found the most interesting about it was just how you even segmented everything. It was like looking into both of your brains to see how you think, the way that you even segmented it, because that in itself was an amazing piece of work. So how did you break up the different sections, and then how did you find the companies and kind of populate it?
Yeah, I mean, so Britt and I spent most of, as many people in the world know, we didn't travel very much in 2020. So we had a chance to really go deep and in an undistracted, sort of very focused way. And we realized probably about midway through that we had bit off a lot more than we could chew, but that was a challenge for us that we happily embraced. So it did not, this took us a long time to kind of figure out how to organize, and not only organize the pillars, the supply side, production and manufacturing, distribution, logistics, and demand, but also really thinking about, okay, who's doing more strategy work? Who's doing more just the blocking and tackling execution? And then who are those kind of more value chain players that really cross over? And the first kind of, qualifications that I'd say, we fully recognize that there are many companies on this landscape that could fit into multiple categories. So we either, had conversations with them to try to figure out what the predominant business model was, or we had to make some judgment calls there. And then the other thing that I would say is, Britta would know exactly the number, I'm sure, but I think we've got about 300 or 400 logos. We came up with about 650 companies in the database, and we really approached this in the same way that we approach our respective landscapes. Mine on the ag tech side, Britta on the food tech. You know, we do just a lot of research. We have our own proprietary databases. We talk to a large number of companies, which is great about these maps. It gives us a chance to get to know where the really exciting innovators are, and we love that part of our work. But you know, just identify it was new to us, right? And a lot of these companies are also more horizontal, especially if we look at the production and logistics and distribution. You know, food and ag might be a vertical that they have a footprint in. That was kind of a criteria for us. Every company on this landscape has a footprint in food and ag. Although many are horizontal. And that was really how we started to kind of come up with this thesis of, okay, now is the time. It feels like we are in that moment where verticalized food and ag specific, food and bev specific technologies are really going to sort of advance the modernization of the food supply chain. And again, we go look back at the massive dislocations that we saw in the supply chain in 2020. And that sense of urgency, I think, is really sort of creating an interesting moment for us. And we're excited to get to know, and we'll shortly make our announcement and a first mile investment that we've made in the last couple of weeks. So we're really excited to support the companies that are looking at building these food and ag specific data sets to address some of these supply chain challenges.
Yeah, when I look at that landscape, and that's so many really smart people and a bunch of money that's gone into it, and great technology that's being directed to the supply chain. So I really, I think people wouldn't realize that that's happening without you really shining a light on it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that we did, and you touched on this earlier, is that the investment has really sort of gathered around the endpoints, right? Food tech and ag tech. But, and here we see a lot of internal R&D. You've got mature companies here that sort of obviously reinvest. So we're not talking about outside investment. I fully understand that there's great R&D that's done. But if you actually look at the venture and private equity investment in the kind of messy middle here, it is sort of surprisingly low given the size of the prize. We kind of call this $150 billion opportunity, and the proportion of outside, risk capital and outside investment that's flowed into the space is surprisingly low given the size of that prize.
Well, do you think that's because people don't see it as an opportunity or don't know how to attack it? Or now that you've kind of broke it open, you think people are going to rush in or, you know, why isn't there more money flowing into there?
I mean, look, food processing isn't very sexy. You know, we hope that changes. We hope that as people start to understand the really interesting stuff, work that's being done around food safety detection, you know, freshness control and application. There are some really interesting opportunities to move the needle significantly, particularly when we talk about these big picture challenges like food waste, right? I mean, that is, everybody talks about food waste. Well, here's a place where we can deploy capital to really move the needle and kind of improve the metrics around food waste, for example.
So you all have identified five trends that'll accelerate tech adoption. Can you kind of go through some of those and highlight what you see are the important trends?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll start, and Britt and I can both speak to this. You know, on the supply side, and this applies across the board, but really operational visibility. As I mentioned before, it's the first mile is kind of the least digitized part of the food supply chain. So increasing that level of the digitalization, you know, tech-enabled resource and asset planning, I think that's really going to be an important trend to watch. As we look at, you know, just anecdotally, I drive around in my part of the valley and I'll drive by a field, you know, a field every couple of miles where you see 20 empty trailers or 30 empty trailers, and you kind of scratch your head and think, wow, I wonder if there's a way to better utilize or optimize the CapEx that's gone into those, you know, 20 or 30 empty trailers. So really using technology to improve resource planning and allocation. And then the other area that we kind of looked at, and you'll see this on the map, is sort of data-driven market insights, right? That, you know, what kind of data and information can marketers, can traders use to reduce volatility, to reduce risk, to reduce loss, you know, across the supply chain? I think there's a lot of neat work that's actually been done and will continue to appear on the horizon around just those market insights. And then I'll also speak to the production piece, the food manufacturing piece. I think really thinking about Industry 4.0 readiness, and Britta touched on it earlier, but how do a lot of these food manufacturing plants or food or value add plants really react to those Industry 4.0 innovations that are coming down the pipeline to improve automation, to improve worker safety, to reduce dependency on workers in some lines, and then also to be able to provide, you know, we haven't talked very much about it, but you can, I don't know what number to use. You can use anywhere between 30 and 60,000 food processors in the US alone. And there are obviously the very large ones that we've seen and heard a lot about, but the SMBs, the small to mid-size food processing, food manufacturing facilities and plants really don't have the same sort of end-to-end operational platforms that some of the big guys have. And it's going to be exciting, I think, to see more of those types of kind of end-to-end technology solutions that can help those SMBs focus on productivity and profitability in their businesses. So I'll kick it over to Britta to talk about a couple of the others.
Yeah. And building on that, you know, looking at the logistics and distribution piece, which, you know, straddles the entire supply chain, the one trend in particular that we're seeing in food and ag, but broadly, is supply chain as a service. So layering in better, even intelligent logistics and distribution options, and not necessarily managing it all within house. So just in the same way that cloud computing, you know, allowed companies to, you know, reduce their upfront CapEx, supply chain as a service is helping, you know, companies across the supply chain augment their procurement, their production control, their manufacturing, you know, quality, warehousing, logistics. You know, kind of outsourcing that where it makes more sense to leverage companies that are specializing in those functions. And so, you know, that obviously, you know, helps, especially on the earlier stage side, helps, you know, SMBs get up to scale quickly, leveraging these other technologies. I think, you know, another piece of that in terms of intelligent logistics and distribution is layering robotics, right? So human-robot collaboration. So we're in DCs and fulfillment centers, we're seeing increased robotics. You know, some are autonomous, but increasingly we're seeing, you know, that relationship between humans and robotic solutions, or AR, VR, in terms of training, in terms, we're seeing that middleware, the software systems that are supporting the operations and the workers within the warehouses. And so, you know, I think that's generally a category that's been horizontal. And as we're seeing this increase in horizontal software, so looking at multiple industries, and as we're seeing this shift towards, you know, increased e-commerce, you know, digital grocery ordering, we're going to see increased solutions that are focused on the fresh and perishable category in terms of robotics and automation at the warehouse and DC center, because you know, obviously they're focused on, you know, how do you fulfill at the quantity and speed that you need in order to make, you know, e-commerce profitable. You know, going a little further down the supply chain to demand, looking at, you know, the actual retail and restaurant businesses themselves, you know, we're seeing a huge urgency for last mile economies of scale. How do you actually get it to the consumer? And, you know, kind of increased focus on, you know, kind of inventory management, demand planning, distribution. How do you upgrade your processes there to better react to, you know, the consumer demands and, you know, these new, you know, business and revenue models, whether it's direct to consumer, omni-channel, or the click and collect options. Obviously, on the restaurant side, which we haven't talked about more, there's you're not in business if you didn't, you know, adopt a digital interface and, you know, online ordering and curbside pickup at a minimum during this past year. So we've seen kind of a huge jump in terms of, you know, kind of technical adoption, whether, and, you know, through Instacart, whether through it's the large, you know, third party marketplaces, not all of it's done in house, but you know, helping these, you know, restaurants and retailers adopt to these new purchasing behaviors. So I think that's changing the kind of business model approach on the demand side. And then, you know, just broadly, we're looking at, you know, if you're looking at taking a step back at the entire value chain, all of these lead to hopefully a tighter and better connection between supply and demand. You know, that's the holy grail there is, you know, and Bonnie, you had mentioned ahead of this, when we were talking, when we were preparing for it, you know, there's little visibility between the warehouse and the point of sale, right? Where's my stuff? Where's my stuff going to? We still have very siloed data and a number of technical gaps to fill there. So ultimately, all of these technologies should be supporting, you know, better connection between supply and demand in terms of visibility.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what the industry needs, and what you look at that landscape and you think, okay, that's what it's going to take. But all right, well, Britta and Shauna, this has been an incredible conversation, and I always learn so much from both of you. And I think you have one of the best views of what's happening in this whole middle piece. And I hope that that drives your investment and also other people's investment into this sector, because it really supports the whole food industry. So thank you very much for the work that you do and for spending this time with us today.
Thanks for having us, Bonnie.
Absolutely, our pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions of what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe, eat your fruits and vegetables, and we will see you next time.